Richard, welcome to Yachting USA in Amsterdam.
Good to see you, sir.
It's good to be seen.
Weather's a little cool here.
Ooh, we saw snow last night.
I saw snow this morning.
Did you? I love it.
On the way here.
I love it. I love it. This is
Floridians.
Fun. Yeah, you know, we got the tans going, the color going, you know.
Short sleeve shirts, I'm an optimist.
Well, we saw sun this morning.
Yes, we did.
Yeah, but we also saw some snow this morning, too. So, you know, figure it out. But here we are. And this is kind of cool because you and I have known each other a long time. I go back, 30 plus years dealing with teak decking systems when I was running nautical structures. And we were deciding what we're going to put on our passerelles, our gangways, our stairways. Mm-hmm. And we went to teak decking systems. That was like the obvious choice for what we wanted to do. And, you know, you guys at teak decking have been supplying nautical structures as our primary and principal and I think only decking supplier for 35 plus years. Yeah. So there's something going on there.
Yeah, well, we appreciate it and we continue to do so. Rick, you probably know this, and I think whenever someone's selecting a company to build and install a teak deck, they really need to take a deep dive into that company. You know, and I think the first thing you have to ask yourself, you know, is are they the right fit? And we may not be the right fit for everybody. You know, it's kind of hard to say that. We're not the least expensive from a deck provider.
You know, I've learned a long, long time ago that there's price and there's value, and you have to understand how those two relate to each other. I also come from a space where our equipment was arguably one of the highest price types of equipment in the industry, but what I was selling was value, and I think that's what you sell, is the value of not just the deck material, but the whole infrastructure, the organization, top to bottom, that brings that deck to your vote.
Yeah. Well, and I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, I think one of the value propositions that we bring to the market, and we're clearly unique in the market globally, is when we build a teak deck and install a teak deck, we own the whole thing. It's our teak deck. We do the engineering, do the digitizing. It's our proprietary caulking. It's our epoxy that we make in-house that we glue it down with. We have our eco sealers for maintaining after the install, ongoing maintenance. So we have it top to bottom, front to back. So if there's ever a failure in one of our decks, we own it. We can only point fingers to ourselves.
Right, right. Well, I'm going to circle back around. You said that you may not be the right fit for everybody, but your decks will be the right fit for the boat that you're applying it to.
That is correct.
There
and it
go.
Will fit well. Yeah, well, we're doing a project right now. Ironically, we put the decks on in 2004. So they've been on that boat for 20 years. And the boat's going through a partial refit. It's going through paint. So they want to replace the decks while it's on the hard. Makes sense.
Sure.
And they had to water jet the decks off. These robot water jets are amazing running around on this.
It's my goodness.
138 meter vessel. So it's pretty large. And it's got the original caulk in it. Underneath the decks, there's no water, there's no corrosion, nothing. You know,
wow. So the system held up.
The system holds up, and that boat
has been
all over the place.
Yeah. So you guys stopped screwing down decks a while ago.
Oh yeah. We'll vacuum bag down the deck in epoxy, our proprietary epoxy. It's the most effective way. Yeah.
I've been in this industry a long time. I've watched what's happened. When I got into the industry, teak was coming from all over the world. Burma was obviously like the prime location. I don't think there was much concern about sustainability or and there was never an argument about using natural teak. But I know today there's a lot of business pressures, a lot of environmental pressures. How does teak decking systems, I don't want to say push back, but address these concerns and stay relevant in this industry? Because I know those that know would prefer a natural wood deck if they could get it.
Another great question. Yeah, it's you can't push back. You got to adapt or die, I guess, as we've heard that saying. We knew the end of the runway was going to come sooner or later. You know, Burma, it's a geopolitical hot potato, and unfortunately, bad things happen there.
Now known as Miramar, right?
Now, yeah, Myanmar.
Myanmar, right.
Yeah, and so we've been, that being said, we've been testing alternatives, you know, thermally modified, acetylated woods, all kinds of different things. And, you know, we will heavily invest our sweat equity and work with a company trying to find something that's going to be a viable alternative going forward. But being a conservative company, you know, it's something we want to test and vet out before we're going to offer it to a client. You know, in today's world, you know, there's a couple of options out there. We're, you know, of course, on the teak side, if you want to use teak as a base, we're doing a new build right now over 100 meter with green teak, which is the laminated teak that's coming out of Thailand. And again, we've been working with that company 10 years on that process. And it's a wood trader that we've dealt with for 41 years.
Okay. So there's a real relationship history.
Real relationship history. And, you know, there was a lot of trust in there. Being a wood trader for us, he started developing this laminated teak. So he's taking young trees, 30, 40-year-old trees, and he's slicing them into 1.5 millimeter veneers and then gluing them back together. So it has a vertical grain look, but we're getting a 85% yield out of the log.
Wow, that's high efficiency.
High efficiency. Where normally when you take vertical grain out of a log, you get 12, 10% yield out of a log.
Whoa. Okay. That's game changing.
That's game changing. And so, you know, we just went through Water Revolution and did a verification on that from a sustainability initiative, and it's like 9.5% better on their eco point scale.
Okay.
Again, we've been dabbling with that for 10 years, and it's a viable option for our client. And this client that has this over 100-meter new build, we made hatches for him, and he put them on the bow of his boat, one on the swim platform of his boat, and ran around for a year with these things and had his crew just absolutely abuse these hatches, acid wash them every day, did all the things you shouldn't do.
Right.
Yeah, take the one off the swim platform, put it at the end of the passerelle when he was at shore, run hand trucks over it. I mean, he's just...
Wow, brutal.
And after a year... they were really happy with the performance, and now we're doing a new build.
That's amazing.
So you have something like that. We have another product out called TMT Light. It's an interesting product. It's actually a variant of Cypress, but they're densifying it when they dry it. And so it's making it harder because Cypress isn't, you know, as hard as teak.
Right.
And so they're getting over 5% of hardness of teak. And so we've had that out in testing for 2 years now. No cracking, no checking. You know, we're in South Florida, so we get to abuse this where...
Naturally.
It goes through its worst case, so we have that as an option. Cork now is another big thing.
I would never thought.
Cork is a big thing. And, of course, it's the only carbon negative offering where they're, you know, growing a cork tree. And after 20 years, they can peel that bark off and... And start, you know, using that bark, which is the cork, for making cork products. And they're into making decking. 5 years later, they can go back and repeal the bark. In the meantime, that tree is creating oxygen, absorbing carbon monoxide and doing its thing, you know, for the environment. So super carbon negative.
That's cool.
And then you get into the composite side.
Right. Right. And of course, there's a lot of boat builders that are pushing to go composite and faux finishes, faux materials. Mm-hmm. I was involved in a project that was built in New Zealand where we did one of our big gangways to match the decking on that. It was a very artistic, was nothing traditional about it.
Right.
McMullen and Wing was building that boat. And from my takeaway is... It opens up some windows of opportunity for some visual creativity. Mm-hmm. What are the challenges or what are the opportunities in working with the synthetic materials?
Well, there's more opportunities than our challenges, quite frankly.
Okay.
It's getting people to think out of the box. We've been in the composite side now for probably 12 years. Again, you get in the composite side, there's EVA foams, there's PVC, and then there's the urethanes. We gravitate to the polyurethanes. For a lot of reasons. Again, it's not the cheapest product, but something that we can stand behind. It's got a 50-year proven history. It's durable, it's repairable, but you have infinite design capability with it.
Right.
Which, to your point, I wish more people would take advantage of that. We did do a center console sport fish about 5-6 years ago, where the designer designed a deck, and instead of having traditional teak lines, he had outlines of pelagic fish all in the deck. So there's all these outlines of pelagic fish, and it was really cool.
That would be cool.
Yeah, a really fun project. So, you know, once we put his deck down, he had all these pelagic fish. And towards the back, he had, like, you know, the place where he could measure his fish to make sure that they were slot fish.
Right, yeah.
Legal. And so he took full maximum advantage of that design capability. We did a 300-foot conversion vessel. And they had a really cool logo that was part of their boat. We put that in the helipad, of course.
Right, right.
So you can do anything.
Is there a price penalty for this? I mean, when you're making the decision whether you go natural teak or natural woods versus synthetic, does that equation fit in, or what's that look like?
Okay, that's a good question. The composite side, be typically about 20% less than teak.
It is less expensive.
Yeah.
Okay.
The installation time is going to be virtually the same. We're using our same installation methods with our composites. We've put a lot of time in designing the process of our composite decks. And so our composite, again, we'll back the train up a little bit. You know, we're doing a traditional panel composite installation. We're using all the same products, the same method. So we can use our installers. They already have the technology and the understanding, same products, proven products, and Perfect. Install a composite deck. If it's going to be, you know, an 80-meter, 100-meter, 120-meter, we may do a hybrid installation where we're doing panels on part of it and then pouring the rest.
Interesting. So I'm picking up on the flexibility of being able to kind of accommodate the client's expectations, the way the boat's laid out, you know, and integrating a visual that you wouldn't necessarily get if you're just routing out teak and laying battens of teak on the deck.
True. Yeah, they can do anything they want, you know, and I just wish more people would start thinking that way and just get, you know, get open their minds up on the composite side.
Yeah. I see it, because that would certainly, if the shift in the industry went more in that direction, it would start taking some of the ecological pressures off the natural wood side too, I would think.
Exactly. Well, we got a battleship right now we're doing composite.
I was watching that, some of your posts on that. That is fascinating.
Yeah, so we've done, I think, Rick, we've done 5 battleships, you know, and we've always been traditional teak, teak off, teak on.
Right.
And we've met with this group out in California, the USS Iowa. I can say the boat because they're promoting it. But I met with them about 3.5 years ago and brought out composite samples, because they said, we've watched you on, I think, 3 of the 5 that you've done, and love it, but they don't want the ongoing maintenance. And they said, we want to do this one time and be done.
Right.
And so we're doing composite decks on USS Iowa right now.
I guess the days of worrying about the incoming battle damage of shells blowing up underneath the deck are gone. We're not really worried about that part anymore.
Not on a museum ship.
But no, that's a cool program. Those are amazing ships too, by the way. Absolutely. You know, this is it's interesting, because as I grew up around this yachting industry and doing what I did, and I watched what you guys did, you make it look so easy. And yet, in conversations with you and others in your organization that I've known for so many years, it's anything but.
Well, kind of like a duck, you know, on the top of the surface, we look calm, cool, and collected.
Yeah, but under the water, we're paddling like hell. Yeah, I love it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's you know, we're fortunate. I mean, in the business 41 years, we've got a lot of tenure in our operation. And we carry that tenure even over here in Europe. Mm-hmm. We've got guys. You know, the guy that heads up our project management on the install sides, or our lead install project manager, I mean, he's been working with Teak Decking for over 20 years.
Wow.
Solely.
Wow.
And, you know, now that we have a European presence, he's the kingpin over here for our installation. And now he's training other project managers, which is fantastic. Our managing director of our European operation, he's been with Teak Decking for 38 years.
Right. And you're down in Spain.
Yeah, we have a factory in Valencia, and we have an office in Barcelona.
Yep.
And then, of course, our home office in Sarasota.
Which I know very well.
Yeah.
So what's in your future? What do you see happening?
You know, in the States, we don't sadly, we don't build that many yachts anymore in the United States, which is...
Well, don't get me started.
I know. Stepping in a mud puddle here. I apologize for
that's
that.
That's all right.
Yeah, it's just been a big part of our business. You know, we still have Westport and Delta and Berger. You know, but the refit business is going strong and will continue to be strong. You know, so many of those Trinities and Christensens and Westports, you know, are still floating around.
The gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah, and we did the original decks, and it makes sense for them to come back. And we still have all the documentation, the drawings, and the patterns, right. and all that stuff for all the stuff that we've done. Right. So, a lot of space there, and you know, of course, refits on anything. And so that's you know, the U.S. is changed a lot. I would say in the last, what do you think, Rick? 7 years. 8 years.
Yeah. Yeah. And since about 2015, 18, somewhere in there, the South shift.
So we just have to adjust. You know, we can't count on all that new build, but we're certainly doing a lot of the refit stuff, which is really good for us. And that's really our slot market. And, you know, our team here in Europe, we were very, very fortunate to have some good relationships with some yards. So we have a really nice blend of new builds on some sizable super yachts.
Yeah.
And then we're doing a lot of refit and a lot of maintenance over here.
Yeah, the refit industry over here is amazing. I was in the Van Lent facility this morning going through one of their new boats. Mind-blowing. In the process of walking the shipyard, they're already talking about the potential construction of a new graving dock, and they've acquired the facility across the canal from them. Hmm. And they're talking about putting in another large shed for refit.
Yeah.
We were in their big shed with two big boats in the shed with a cofferdam between the two. It was all dried out, but you could see clearly how they could flood one end of it and keep the other end dry and move these boats in and out. That's an investment. That's an investment we haven't made in the United States yet. Right. And I think that if we're going to be serious about refits in the States, we're going to have to be looking at those kinds of investments. What's been done with directors up in Fort Pierce is just kind of scratching the surface, I think.
Right.
What was done in Savannah at Savannah Yachting Center, it's getting a little bit closer to what needs to be done, but, you know.
Still some work.
If you see what they're doing here in Europe, you realize, wow, we're behind the curve, and we need to really start to find investments to catch back up if we're going to be serious about taking on the refit industry and doing serious refits in the States.
Yeah, we feel it, Rick. We do. But the good news is, for us in particular, we've had, I think, 5 projects this year that we've shared operations on either side of the Atlantic. So we digitized in Italy. We're installing in the U.S. We have digitized a couple of boats up in Savannah. Boats get back in the water, come over to here. We're building the decks out of our Valencia, Spain operation and installing over here.
Love it.
So it's giving our customer base an experience. They can deal with the same company, the same processes, same everything on either side of the Atlantic. So they're really liking that. But I think the thing that kind of makes me a little bit concerned is that, you know, a lot of these boats are leaving the U.S. soil and getting done over here.
I talked to 2 captains earlier this year that had made the decision and to spend the money close to $300,000 each to bring the boat across to do paint work and not even significant refit, just, you know, just 4 or 5 months of refit, feeling that they were safer, more confident, which is unfortunate. But it does lead into a nice segue in this conversation as we wrap up, is that I'm over here this year to really talk to our European partners and people that we've done business with and know and love and understand how, as an industry, we really need to stay away from this.
Yeah,
and 100%. We need to be way more into this, that, you know, we're going to see an incredible increase in the economic power of the United States in the next 3 or 4 years.
I would agree.
No question about that. With what's come out of the recent elections and where things are going economically in the United States. And, you know, a rising tide floats all ships. And so as our tide comes up and we do more and more economic growth and we have more economic prosperity, there'll be more American owners coming over here doing business in Europe.
Yeah.
American companies such as yours needs to be able to be benefited by this.
Yep.
And I think that's what's happening with your investment in Valencia. in what's happening here with the refits that are going on this side of the pond. We need to kind of embrace that while at the same time pay attention to it, see if we can't emulate some of this, get the reinvestments into our infrastructure back in the States. We can get here. It's not happening tomorrow, but we can get here if we have the mindset and desire to do it.
Couldn't agree more. That's our, I think that's our next mission. People like you and I that have been in this industry for a while, we got to push the envelope so we protect that industry for the next 10, 20, 30, 40 years.
You know, I've got the next generation behind me sitting in this room with us, helping us with this podcast.
And
I want it there for him.
Yep, I agree.
I think it's really important.
Yep.
So, Richard, I can't thank you enough for taking your valuable time to sit with us and have this conversation. We've been talking about doing this for a while. Here we are in this amazing city of Amsterdam. I think in honor of you, I'm going to roll up my sleeves before I walk outside a little later and just take on some of this cool weather and go, yeah, I own this.
There you go.
I love it.
All right, Rick.
Well,
appreciate
Rich,
it, brother.
Good to see you again. I wish you good travels. And until next time, I'm out of here.